I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
COVID critical. The fall surge is here, and we are not prepared.
We are still reusing things that are normally single-use items.
Tonight, on the ground, in the states most at risk. California wildfires largely contained, but now extreme heat and strong winds deliver dangerous fire conditions to Northern California.
Never, ever, ever have I seen anything like now.
A massive gut punch, an industry on its knees. Will airlines survive the pandemic's economic wrath? And don't become a victim. Real estate wire fraud.
It seemed too good to be true.
Homebuyers devastated by a sophisticated hacking scheme.
And then I called Lindsay and I said, "You've been robbed."
Good evening. The COVID surge we've been hearing about, the fall winter uptick, it's here. It started as a trickle, then as a stream, now it's a flood. This new wave, or whatever you want to call it, is right this minute. Nobody's told us. We see it, so we're reporting it. Look at this. This is a new COVID field hospital at the Wisconsin State Fair. It opened today for recovering patients, so there's room for new ones in strained hospitals. We'll go there live. Remember, it was Central Park back in the spring in New York City. Now it's the Wisconsin State Fair. And look at this map. In Minnesota, the National Guard called out to help with nursing homes on opposite ends of the state. Too many sick, not enough doctors. Dubuque County, Iowa, 14% of tests are now positive. Massachusetts, current hospitalizations are nearly 80% up from the low. Tarrant County, Texas, schools cases up 33% from last week. Denver, in-person middle and high school delayed again. And no trick-or-treating in Beverly Hills. Fines announced for kids who go door-to-door. In Mississippi, six major hospitals report every ICU bed is taken. Hospital COVID patients at record highs in Wisconsin and Iowa and North Dakota and South Dakota and Oklahoma and in Montana. Hospitalizations up 72% this month. Average daily cases up 63%. That's the highest in our nation. And now, these are all the states where the numbers are trending up. All of the ones in red, all on the rise, not a one going down. And that was the picture of the surge, the fall wave, the one we've been dreading. That is obviously now right here. Shaquille Brewster is at the Field Hospital outside Milwaukee and on our top story tonight. Shaq.
Shep, that alternate care facility here in Wisconsin did open up officially today. It will begin to accept patients coming tomorrow. And the purpose of it is to help alleviate the pressure on some of those hospitals across the state that are at or near capacity. And what you're hearing from doctors here in this state is that this state is well into a crisis. They say that they're begging people to start pulling back and start staying home voluntarily to help flatten the curve. And that's what they continue to say. What officials here in the state are asking people to do is stop going out shopping, stop going to large gatherings. Those common phrases of wash your hands, wear the mask, socially distance when possible. Meanwhile, what the governor has been fighting is some resistance as he continues to try to block and stop the spread. A county judge today pushed back on his order to help reduce the spread by blocking 25%, limiting restaurants and bars to 25% occupancy. A county judge blocking that order for now. Hearings will happen on Monday, but you continue to hear local officials plead with people to help stop the spread, to pull back and help people take this seriously.
Shaq, have health officials said why they think there and now this problem?
What you hear from local officials is that simply the governor is out of tools in his toolbox. This is a state where back in the spring, the stay-at-home orders were struck down by the state Supreme Court. This is also a state that we know there's a lot of partisan back and forth. So he has not been able to come up with an agreement with Republicans who run this legislature. Local officials are saying, despite any orders that you hear, despite laws that are being blocked, they're begging and pleading with people to take this seriously and do what they can on their own to stop the spread of this virus.
Shaquille, thanks. New York is fighting a coronavirus resurgence in hot spots across our state. Today, a message from Governor Andrew Cuomo to the local governments. And here it is. If you don't enforce the safety restrictions, you will not get any funding from New York. Remember, it was New York that was once the national epicenter of coronavirus. These headlines from the spring, they show how bad it was. We improved a bit over the summer, but take a look at these from the past 2 weeks. So similar. The surge is on. CNBC's Contessa Brewer is live north of the city where COVID cases have skyrocketed. Just not good, Contessa.
Yeah, Shep, you said it here. Coronavirus is sending all these New Yorkers to the hospital, double the number of hospitalizations from just a month ago. And Orange County, where I am right now, has by far the highest infection rate in the state, more than 7% today. And the governor says these so-called hot spots are driving 70% of the hospitalizations.
With pandemic fatigue setting in, some New Yorkers are letting down their guard, ditching masks, attending parties, and driving up infection rates. Hospitals are seeing the most COVID admissions since June. The governor calls it appalling.
Frankly, I don't know what they were thinking.
We are threatened with a full-blown second wave in New York City.
Over the weekend, the city handed out $150,000 in fines to those not wearing masks. A banquet hall on Long Island was fined $12,000 for allowing a Sweet 16 party that became a super spreader event.
We were only told that the outbreak was here.
37 people infected, many of them students, who then exposed others at multiple schools. And the governor today announced a $20,000 fine for the promoters of a Chainsmokers concert this summer in the Hamptons. The state infection rate still hovers around 1%, but in those troubling hotspots, positive rates recently reached as high as 25%.
We have to develop a sophisticated capacity to find those very small, we call them mini clusters, where the cases are flaring up and immediately attack them.
The situation has gotten so bad in New York City that Mount Sinai Hospital sent out a memo obtained by CNBC warning of an impending bed shortage. It's urging departments to expedite discharging patients to make room for incoming cases, Shep.
Contessa, thanks. America is failing at COVID by so many metrics. As cases rise again, this richest, most powerful, most resourceful nation in all the world does not have enough PPE for our frontline heroes. It's a staggering fact. We banged pots and pans. We sent food to hospitals. We wrote love notes on social media, but somehow we couldn't figure out how to get them enough masks and gowns. Why not?
Part of it is that these supply chains are very complicated and cannot be ramped up quickly. Part of it is that we haven't mobilized existing resources by invoking the Defense Production Act. Part of it is that there's worldwide demand.
The surge is here, the masks are not, and everything's getting worse. And we failed the front line of hospital defense. Here's CNBC's Meg Terrell.
It's a really desperate situation still as far as PPE goes.
PPE every day!
The shortage of personal protective equipment, the masks, gowns, and gloves health workers need to stay safe while helping patients, was so bad in the spring that a group of doctors banded together to form a nonprofit to help.
We plan to be around for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, until someone else stepped in to kind of take charge of this process.
7 months later, the group called Get Us PPE is still needed, more than ever. Requests for critical supplies have been rising. Most needed, N95 respirator masks, surgical masks, and disinfecting wipes.
Similar to when you go to the store and try to find Clorox wipes, they just don't exist.
Dr. Bernie Klein's hospital, Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in California, started making their own sanitary wipes as a workaround. The need for supplies is huge. On an average day, the hospital uses 2,000 masks, 600 gowns, and 1,000 gloves, depending how many COVID patients are being treated. Governments have also been working to replenish stockpiles since the spring. The U.S. now says the Strategic National Stockpile and FEMA have more than 120 million N95s available for deployment, 55 million gowns, and 1.7 million gloves. States have banded together as well, but still, there's a shortage.
Sending people into work every day and asking them to do their jobs without the tools they need is not the American way. We should have done better.
And Shep, we are hearing that for larger hospital systems, the supply chains are improving somewhat. But for the little guys, it's really tough. And obviously, this problem is nowhere close to being solved for everyone.
Meg, thanks. Nick Saban tested positive for COVID today. That's from the University of Alabama, which reported in the last hour. The head football coach there got word at the Crimson Tide training facilities and immediately left, presumably to go into isolation. We don't know. The biggest football game, arguably, of the SEC season is this weekend. Saban's Tide against number 3 Georgia Saturday night. That game is scheduled to go on, at least for now. LSU, Florida, not so much. The Gators, we're told, had positive tests and then quarantines. So under the guidelines, that game is now postponed, tentatively scheduled for December the 12th. That's if the SEC makes it to December. COVID could ruin just about every good thing. Planet Earth went through the hottest September ever recorded. That's from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. On the West Coast, Phoenix hit triple digits on 144 days this year. That's a record, too. In Las Vegas, it hasn't rained. Nothing significant since the middle of April. 177 days. And yes, another record. And in California, where officials say 4 million acres have already burned this fire season, a new warning tonight from the National Weather Service. Heat and high winds are creating the, quote, potential for rapid spread of fire. NBC Bay Area's chief meteorologist Jeff Ranieri. Jeff, that risk goes up tonight, right?
It really does, Shep. Tonight through tomorrow, also into early Friday, we're under this high fire danger. It just seems like one hit after another for us here in California with our record-breaking fire season. So let's show you the setup of what's happening right now, and it's all about this area of high pressure. It's our version here in Northern California of a dry Santa Ana wind. The circulation around this is driving down these drier northeasterly winds. At the same time, we have some heat moving in from Southern California. So it's this one two hit for us. A wider look here at California, and you'll be able to see the hottest temperatures go to Southern California with 90s to 100, but the highest fire danger is here across the Bay Area. I want to zoom in and give you the closest look here at where I think the risk will be number one, and that's for a lot of cities that a lot of us know in wine country. Napa, Sonoma, St. Helena, also Calistoga. That's where in the mountains we could see those 30 to 50 mile per hour wind gusts. Humidity values down to about 10%. I talked about record breaking. Look at the numbers. This year, over 4 million acres burned. Largest California fire ever. The August complex this year, over 1 million acres. So it now ranks as one of the worst fire seasons on record. Shep.
Jeff Ranieri for us from San Francisco. So firefighters preparing for another epic battle. And soon they may get some new backup. Look at this. They just rolled this out in Los Angeles, a firefighting robot. They used it yesterday at a really big fire downtown. The robot works by remote control, they tell us. The LAFD reports it can put out car fires in just seconds, can bulldoze up to 8,000 pounds. They'll use it mostly in cities, they tell us, for now. But the fire chief says it could help crews battling wildfires at some point down the road. Now the vote. No debate. Instead, dueling town halls with 20 days to go, we break down the polls that matter right now to both campaigns.
Let's take back this country.
I feel your pain because I felt your pain.
Inside the numbers, a dead heat in Iowa. What this key battleground tells us about the state of the race. 9 million people in 5 days. Can China pull off testing an entire city for COVID-19?
2, 1, and lift off.
Plus, this American astronaut hitches a ride on a Russian rocket for the last time.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
The vote. President Trump is no longer shedding coronavirus. He is not contagious. NBC News confirms through the National Institutes of Health and Dr. Anthony Fauci himself. And as a result, NBC News will host the president for a campaign town hall tomorrow night, 8 Eastern. Joe Biden will do his own town hall, same time, on ABC. There is displeasure in the air over this. We're aware. Remember, the nonprofit that hosts presidential debates canceled the originally scheduled for tomorrow night after President Trump tested positive for COVID and then refused to do a virtual debate. Then Joe Biden signed with ABC for the town hall. There's more. See, weeks ago, NBC offered both candidates town halls. Biden accepted and Lester Holt hosted just last week. Now President Trump accepts, and that's happening tomorrow. Savannah Guthrie hosting from Florida on multiple platforms, including here on CNBC. It's all complicated. Thanks, COVID. Anyway, right now, President Trump is holding another of his airport rallies, this time in Des Moines, as we mentioned, under the White House own guidelines for COVID. Social gatherings in Des Moines of any kind should include no more than 25 people. 25. See that? The White House says it expects 10,000. Remember, candidate Trump won Iowa by almost 10 points against Hillary Clinton back in 2016. Yet there he is. You just saw the get together. NBC News calls Iowa now a toss up, except maybe out on the farm where tonight we find CNBC's Jane Wells.
Shep, we're in the middle of harvest and farmers are bringing their grain here to this Landis facility. Farming is always a risky business, but this year has been a perfect storm of bad news on top of a multi-year trade war. So you think support for the president might be shaky around here? It's not.
It's miserable in Iowa.
It's really coming down.
It's really coming down. It's good to see, but could have been 60 days earlier.
When you talk to farmers gathering for breakfast pizza at their local grain co-op, it's been a rough year. And not just this year.
This is really the seventh year of what we consider a downturn in the agriculture industry.
Iowa farmers have been hit with trade wars, drought, dropping ethanol demand due to COVID, and hurricane-force winds in August called a derecho, which destroyed a good amount of what promised to be a bumper crop.
In acres, probably 1,500 acres, it'll affect us personally.
Back here is where we had two grain storage bins.
Dave Struthers has been farming 37 years, and he estimates losses from the derecho wind event will cost him $180,000.
This is probably the worst chaotic year we've ever had. You throw COVID into it and all this other stuff that's just made the turmoil seem unending.
COVID forced the annual Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa, to go virtual for the first time in its 67-year history.
Being the largest farm show in America, it's a lot of work. The virtual event has been a lot more work.
As bad as it looks, and believe me, it is bad, the federal government is predicting that farm incomes will actually rise this year due to one main reason, aid from the Trump administration.
The USDA has set aside up to $30 billion in coronavirus relief to farmers, and net median farm incomes are expected to rise this year 13%. Farmers are grateful. A poll by the Farm Progress Show indicates that while support for the president dropped 2 years ago to 60%, it's now higher than it was in 2016 at 75%.
Can I say I'm a Trump supporter?
You are absolutely allowed to say that.
Okay. He has done what he said he was going to do.
The assistances that are out there, whether it is, again, insurance or what the government has provided, has helped weather that storm.
Is next year going to be better?
Yes, I'm optimistic.
They say they have to be optimistic. Now, the farmers tell me they'd rather have trade than aid, but they'll take the aid. For the news, I'm Jane Wells in Baird, Iowa.
And Iowa is one to watch politically, a key swing state and emblematic, really, of others in the Midwest that flipped from blue to red back in 2016. Fierce battlegrounds in 2020. Steve Kornacki with us now. Steve, what are we seeing in Iowa?
Yeah, well, Shep, it doesn't get any closer than this. This is the poll average in Iowa right now. Biden 47, Trump 47, a tie. It is a surprise when you go back a few months to what expectations were. It's a surprise to find Iowa this close because, as you mentioned it, this is 2016. This was basically a double-digit Trump victory in Iowa in 2016. So initially, this was not seen as a battleground state. And one of the reasons, see all these red counties right here? I want to show you something. Pay attention to these because this is what happened before Trump was on the ballot in Iowa. This is 2012. This is Barack Obama. Huh. Every one of those red Trump counties had been an Obama county.
It's like an overlay.
Trump, yeah, the Obama Trump voter that we've talked about. There are more counties in Iowa that went Obama in 2012, Trump in 2016 than in any other state in the country. It's basically one third of the counties in the state. Look at that swing from Obama winning the state by 6 to Trump getting it by 10 points. There's no state that Trump flipped in 2016 that the swing was bigger between 2012 and 2016. So we talked so much about Trump's dominant win in Iowa in 2016. Sometimes we forget. It was an Obama state just 4 years before that.
Incredible. Let's go across the country and that other big battleground, Florida, 29 electoral votes. And we're getting some numbers around early voting, Steve.
Yeah, election day. It's election month in Florida. It's already underway. In fact, look at that. 1.7 million ballots have already been returned in Florida. And here's what we're seeing. These are some stark numbers. This is the percentage by party of what's been returned. Look at that advantage for Democrats. They're 51% of returned ballots Democratic, 29% Republican. It's stark, but it's not unexpected. The polls have been telling us that Democratic voters, far more than Republican voters, plan to vote early, whether it's in person early, whether it's by mail. Republicans saying they're much more likely to vote on election day. And I urge folks, keep this in mind whenever we see these early voting numbers. Remember 4 years ago. 4 years ago, Democrats were winning the early voting, mail-in voting war in Florida. Clinton led by 6 in those votes. But on election day, that left a lot of Republican voters to come out on election day. They did for Trump, and he ended up carrying Florida by a point.
Incredible. Lots to watch in the next few weeks. Steve, thanks. And tomorrow,
thanks.
That live town hall hosted by our own Savannah Guthrie with President Trump, that airs 8 o'clock Eastern time on NBC, also here on CNBC, MSNBC, across our digital platforms. If it has a Peacock or it's Telemundo, it's right there. Judge Amy Coney Barrett, the final day of confirmation hearings. If you see it as a bit of a political theater action, you're not alone. But today, we got to the part that the D.C. insiders have really been anticipating. The VP candidate and Senator Kamala Harris, the former prosecutor herself, questioning the nominee again, but with more time to drill down today. CNBC's Ilan Moy is live in D.C. Ilan, did we see fireworks?
Well, Shep, the two of them sparred over several fronts, including on voting rights. Now, Barrett clearly stating that racial discrimination, unfortunately, still does exist. But Harris wanted to know what she thought about voting discrimination.
My question, however, is do you agree with Chief Justice Roberts, who said voting discrimination still exists? No one doubts that.
Senator Harris, I will not comment on what any justice said in opinion, whether an opinion is right or wrong, or endorse that proposition.
Now, Harris also appeared to grow frustrated as Barrett dodged questions over climate change and environmental regulations. Democrats also tried to find out where she would draw the line on the powers of the president. Barrett said that no one is above the law, but she didn't go much further than that.
Does a president have an absolute right to pardon himself for a crime? I mean, we heard this question after President Nixon's impeachment.
So far as I know, that question has never been litigated. That question has never arisen.
Now, Barrett said that her personal beliefs would not get in the way of her judgments from the bench. But still, Republicans tried to hold her up as a role model for conservative women.
This is the first time in American history that we've nominated a woman who's unashamedly pro-life and embraces her faith without apology, and she's going to the court.
Well, Barrett is expected to be confirmed by the committee next week and on the Senate floor shortly after that. Shep?
Ilan, thanks. Alarming COVID numbers out of Europe tonight. Now the French take new measures to stop the spread. The City of Lights going dark. What we're learning, and how your next lunch order could help fight climate change. Panera Bread's newest plan. But first, two different concerts in two different cities hit the streets as we take a CNBC trip coast to coast. Texas. A huge fire consuming an apartment complex under construction. The site near Houston lit up this morning. Crews fighting the flames from every direction. They say they got it under control after a few hours. No word on a cause.
Georgia. Lightning strikes twice for the Atlanta Braves. Two nights in a row, second baseman Ozzie Albies hits a ninth inning homer. Already a feat in itself, but on both nights, his teammates snagged them. The same teammates in the same place. The Braves' bullpen. New York. The best seat to watch the Philharmonic might be on a sidewalk in the Bronx. The orchestra's usual Lincoln Center home shut down because of COVID, so they're taking their music to the streets with a series of pop-up concerts, an instrumental way to bring life back to the big city. Colorado. You don't have to go to the Big Apple for a concert. Live music used to fill Commons Park every week in the summer, but not in the pandemic. So the group that organized them taking the concerts mobile, driving performers out to Denver's underserved communities.
It has really been exciting to see people come and show up and dance and just really have a good time in neighborhoods that don't normally have concerts.
And that party truck with the DJ booth? Organizers say that's made from an old fire truck. And that's a final note in this CNBC trip coast to coast.
No relief in sight. Negotiations in Washington are stalled again. And that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Speaker Pelosi and the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin talked today again and again, did not reach an agreement on any aid. Mnuchin said getting it done before the election would be difficult. When have you heard that before? They'll talk again tomorrow, we're told. Starbucks putting its money where its mouth is. The coffee chain outlined a plan to compensate to increasing minority representation. The goal? At least 30% of its corporate employees and 40% of its retail and manufacturing employees to be people of color by 2025. And staying with restaurants, is that dish spicy, vegetarian, and is it climate friendly? Panera Bread will use labels to highlight menu items that have a small carbon footprint. Entrees with the distinction include broccoli cheddar soup and the Mediterranean bowl. Oh, man. On Wall Street, a down day. Second in a row, the Dow off 166. Amazon closed down 2.5%. That dragged on the S&P off 0.2%. And the NASDAQ down 0.8%. Most sectors in the red today, 8 of 11. Banks, tech, biotech stocks all hit hard. Industrials, the top performer. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. The United States averaging more than 50,000 new COVID cases a day for the first time in nearly 2 months. That's new data from Johns Hopkins and states in the West helping fuel the new surge. In Colorado, cases hit all-time highs. Montana, COVID, putting more people in the hospital than ever before. And Utah reports active cases more than doubled over the past month. The governor there says the state is facing what he calls its most dire episode yet. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is tracking it all from Los Angeles on the top story at the bottom of the hour. Miguel?
Hey, Shep, you named the state out west, and I can pretty much guarantee you there are going to be some issues with the coronavirus. In fact, across the country, in about 36 states, the number of cases are on the rise. But as you mentioned, it's a bad situation out west here. In Colorado, they're actually experiencing what they say is most likely a third wave of this pandemic. Not a second wave like much of this country may be beginning to experience right now, but a full-blown third wave. In some regions, there's not even ICU beds that are open in certain cities. Also in Utah, the positivity rate there is at nearly 20%. That means about 20% of people who go for a COVID test are coming back positive, infected with the virus. The governor there says it's a crisis situation. Here's what he had to say a short time ago.
Utah is now facing its most dire episode yet in this epidemic. And frankly, it doesn't matter how tired we are. We must, in fact, win this fight. Our infections are at an all-time high. The dramatic increase in infection has put the integrity of our healthcare system at risk.
Here in California, where we're home to the most coronavirus cases in the country at over 850,000, there is some good news. The number of hospitalizations is slightly beginning to tick down. So that's good news, but officials say we are still in the middle of a very nasty bite here, and they're also expecting a second wave to hit this state pretty soon. The state is actually asking people and families not to go trick-or-treating this year. They say they want them to abide by CDC guidelines and to stay home, have virtual costume parties. Certainly a whole new reality, Shep, for so many people all across the country.
Miguel, thanks. For context, let's turn to Dr. Uche Blackstock. She's an emergency room doctor in New York City, the founder and CEO of the group Advancing Health Equity. Doctor, it's nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So much talk about the big cities, yet you're focused now on the small towns out in the heartland.
Exactly. I think, you know, we're seeing a surge that I feel like could have been avoidable. And we're seeing it as a result of multiple small gatherings, families getting together. And as you, as was mentioned in the earlier segment, we definitely have to be concerned about going into Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, having more indoor gatherings and seeing hospitalizations increase as a result.
You know, I'm looking at newspapers and websites all over the country today. Long Island, a Sweet 16 party, a super spreader, a wedding out west, a family get together down south. People are COVID weary. They want to see their people. What do you tell them?
I know. And I get it. I get it. You know, I want us to see my family, too. My father is in Florida. I haven't seen him in a very long time because he's elderly. But the fact is that we have to hold steadfast. We know that masking, physical distancing, and especially as we head into the cold weather, avoiding indoor gatherings, indoor dining, gyms, it's going to really be key to getting on top of the infections.
Doctor, the most concerning really for me, and maybe embarrassing for our nation, is the state of the PPE, that our heroes in the hospitals don't have the protection they need. After all these months, knowing this was coming, I talked to lots of doctors who were telling me, but have you experienced this? And do you know what the specific needs are?
Yeah, no. So actually, this is devastating. We had 6 to 7 months to prepare for this. And unfortunately, we still have an urgent PPE shortage. We haven't been able to mobilize domestic production of PPE. You know, we needed to invoke the Defense Production Act to ensure that we have adequate N95 masks, surgical masks, disinfecting wipes. And we really are letting our healthcare workers down.
You know, you look at Wisconsin and Iowa and all the trouble that they're having. I look to my home state of Mississippi, where 6 of the hospitals in that state are completely out of ICU beds. And you wonder, are those health professionals going to be protected?
Right. And what we're going to see is they're going to be reusing N95 masks. N95 masks are really only supposed to be used once per patient. And now they're using them for weeks on end. We have to do better for our healthcare providers. We need a national strategy, not just around testing, contact tracing, but also around domestic production of PPE.
Well, we can't say it often enough. Dr. Uche Blackstock, thank you so much to you and your colleagues for all you do for all of us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
A state of emergency in France. Have you heard this? President Macron has made it official. Starting this weekend, Paris and 8 other cities will be under curfew, shut down from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. France seeing daily cases spike nearly 70% over the past 10 days. The new measures come just 4 months after the lockdown ended. Today, Italy seeing more than 7,000 new cases. That's a national record number of infections reported in a single day. It's never happened. Even more concerning, intensive care admissions up 13% in the last 24 hours. And Russia, man alive, it's worst, one of the worst hit countries in all the world. It's reporting more than 11,000 new cases every day over the past week. President Vladimir Putin announcing an approval of a second COVID vaccine after early stage studies. Of course, there are no published reports and no peer reviews. Scientists criticized him when he did the same kind of thing with another vaccine 2 months ago. The Central Park Karen, remember her? She apparently talks more than we first reported. You may remember the video in which she called the police on a black bird watcher. That video went viral back in the spring. Well, now, you think that was something? Wait till you hear this new stuff. And in Japan, you can say this floating house is a high-rise. Don't attempt humor, Smith. It is a clever way to prevent flood damage. It's after the break.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
Fires ravaging one of the world's tallest peaks and chaos in the streets of Bangkok as we go round the world in 80 seconds. Thailand, demonstrators for democracy clashing with supporters of the monarchy in Bangkok. Both sides throwing stuff and trading punches. This protester lying hurt on the ground while others shield him. The democracy side also criticizing the king for spending too much time out of the country. Tanzania, these fires burning Africa's tallest mountain. More than 500 volunteers battling the flames on Mount Kilimanjaro. They've slowed it down, they say. The cause? Reports are it may have been a worker warming food for tourists. Japan, a house that floats when the water rises. A developer came up with a concept for use in areas that flood. Pretty simple, really. Wires attached to the home, anchored to the ground. Here's the experiment. On the left, a conventional home's living room, ruined. On the right, the floating one, all good. Houses like this went on sale last month. Saudi Arabia. Falcons are big business for hunting here. This young one just sold for $175,000. Happened at a 45-day auction for hunting birds. The club behind the sale reports it's the most ever paid for a falcon of this breed. And for that kind of cash, it should fly around the world in 80 seconds. What industry has COVID crippled more than travel? The airlines are reeling, and the people who work for them are hoping for a second round of help from Congress. It hasn't come. Tens of thousands are already laid off. Hundreds of thousands more in and around that industry could go soon. It is a crisis. That's the subject of a documentary that premieres right after this newscast here on CNBC. Here's a preview. In the early light of dawn, New York's LaGuardia Airport is waking up. It's a major economic engine of the city that relies on an essential workforce to keep things moving. TSA agents are among the first to take their places.
All right, good morning. I'm just going to go over the national shift brief real quick.
I think the job we're actually doing is very critical. Whatever the situation is, we'll definitely work through it in a positive way.
But these days, mornings have been starting a little differently around the airport. Temperature checks, masks, and hand sanitizers are now as routine as clocking in.
Monday, Tuesday, pre-check, and everyone else just head over down to 1 and 2.
New York City, one of the nation's original COVID-19 hotspots, shut down in late March. The majority of the country soon followed, and with most customers too frightened to fly, airports were all but closed. Today, they're fighting to recover. LaGuardia, sort of my home base airport. Haven't been in a commercial airport since, well, before the pandemic. And kind of apprehensive, you know, like, what is this place that I know so well gonna be like now? Have an idea, but about to find out. An American airport is like a city unto itself. LaGuardia alone provides 15,000 jobs to local workers.
I'm a New Yorker, you know, working at LaGuardia, you know, it's always been something that I wanted to do.
I'm a customer service rep at LaGuardia Airport. I've been with the company for 22 years.
Thank you so much.
I'm a crew chief and I'm here 30 years. Never, ever, ever have I seen anything like now.
Nobody has. We call them essential workers because they are essential. They fix engines, they land planes, they clean bathrooms. And then there's all of the industry around them. Tonight you'll meet a cab driver who lives with his wife and kids in an apartment in Queens with his brother and his wife and their kids in an apartment in Queens. One of them died. Coronavirus killed them. Their community is ravaged and he is screaming red, white, and blue. I love America and the American way, and I'm hanging on because this is the land of the free. It was really inspiring. People hit so hard. Inspiring. You know, Washington gave the airlines a round of relief this past spring. That money is long gone. They're calling it a negotiation now on a second round, but it's going nowhere. And in the meantime, Tens of thousands of workers are furloughed, meaning they're not getting a job. Check. Again, it's Shepard Smith Reports, Air Travel in Turmoil, and it premieres right after this newscast, the live airing, and then you'll see it a few more times here on CNBC. It's the latest scam now hitting home buyers. You're ready to buy a house, right? Then suddenly, the down payment, gone.
Every time we sent an email, we were communicating with the criminals.
How the hackers pull it off, and how you can spot them no matter what you're buying. Video. There it is. Plus, no littering, and everybody must come in peace. New rules to follow on the surface of the moon. Karen. Remember that confrontation in Central Park? The Central Park Karen, everybody called her. The white woman out walking her dog and the black man who told her to put a leash on it. Video of their run-in went viral, and here it is. New details emerged today at the woman's arraignment. Prosecutors say she called police on the bird watcher not once, but twice. This is all new. They say the second time she lied and said he tried to assault her. Amy Cooper is the name. She's charged with filing a false police report. Prosecutors say they're trying to work out a plea deal. The American dream. You find a house in your budget, place you like. It's inspected. The owners accept your bid. You wire the money and poof, the money is gone. It's a real-life nightmare happening now to thousands of Americans as they prepare to buy a new home. Money meant for the closing, hijacked. The FBI telling us scammers took more than, get this, $220 million this year, much of it diverted to China and gone forever. The investigation from CNBC's Andrea Day.
It really was a dream house, and it kind of ticked all the boxes.
It seemed too good to be true, almost. Exactly what we wanted.
With lots of space for the kids and miles of trails to explore and back, Aaron and Lindsay Fisher said yes to the $1.4 million house in Petaluma, California, and quickly put down a deposit.
Everything kind of just came together.
And right before closing, they wired the final payment from their account at Bank of America.
$921,235.10.
But 2 days after he wired the cash, this call from the mortgage company.
Aaron, where did you wire the money? I said, I wired the money to Wells Fargo. Aaron, we don't have a Wells Fargo account. You need to call your bank immediately. And then I called Lindsay and I said, we've been robbed.
The Fishers were hit with real estate wire fraud. Here's how it goes down. The home buyer, in this case the Fishers, is having a legitimate email conversation with a real estate agent, attorney, or someone from the mortgage or title company. That's when the scammer secretly hacks into the conversation and starts emailing from an address that looks like a real player in the deal.
All of us thought we were communicating with each other, and every time we sent an email, we were communicating with the criminals.
And he had no idea the criminals were about to go in for the kill, using that fake email address to send wiring instructions that look real. The cash Fisher thought he wired to the mortgage company got diverted instead to this mysterious Wells Fargo account number.
They stole a lot of financial security from us.
I haven't allowed myself to feel too upset, but it is. I was really excited.
Here's what we've uncovered about their stolen cash. In those bogus wiring instructions, Fisher was told to send the cash to Wells Fargo. It was a real account number, but the name was totally made up. Schlossberg & Associate, LLC. A major red flag, and a fact that neither Bank of America or Wells Fargo ever verified, because there's no federal law that says they have to.
So what was the real name on the account? Wells Fargo tells us, we cannot discuss information about our customers or their accounts due to customer privacy.
The money went from Bank of America to Wells Fargo, from Wells Fargo back to Bank of America, and then out to a Chinese construction corporation.
We confirmed with a source close to the case, the money that should have gone to the mortgage company made its way across the globe, ultimately landing in China, which is where the FBI says money stolen in this type of fraud often ends up. And that usually means the money is gone forever.
And, Shep, we actually have a happy update tonight for you. The Fishers wound up getting all of their money back. Most people aren't as lucky. Now, Bank of America tells us by acting quickly, the bank was able to claw back all of that cash. Luckily, their dream home, get this, was still on the market. So the Fishers bought it again. But this time, they used one of these. Remember these? Those old-fashioned
cashier's checks.
By the way, Shep, it's not just houses. This scam can happen when wiring money for just about anything.
Yeah, what do people do to keep this from happening to them, Andrea?
Well, Shep, just knowing that this can happen, that's the best start. That's a great start right there. And experts say, look closely at those emails. Make sure every letter in the sender's address is what it should be. You look for things like an extra period in the address or a letter like a G replaced with a Q. And also, if somebody emails you late in the game wanting to change all those wiring details, that's a major red flag. You have to stop right there, get on the phone, confirm every detail before you wire any money. Yeah, Shep?
I'll say. Andrea Day, thanks so much. A historic final mission. A record-setting voyage may mark the end of an era for NASA. The big bucks. NASA will stop shelling out to one nation next. A historic space mission could be the last of its kind. This Russian spacecraft with an American astronaut on board landing safely today at the International Space Station. NASA says it was a record-breaking 3-hour and 3-minute voyage, the fastest trip ever. Richard Engel now on why we may never see a mission like this one again.
2-1.
This could be the end of an era.
Lift off.
Early this morning, a Russian Soyuz rocket blasted off, carrying an American astronaut from a launch site in remote Kazakhstan. It's the last scheduled time the United States will pay Russia for a ride into space. The mission carries astronaut Kate Rubins and 2 Russian cosmonauts for a 6-month rotation on the International Space Station, which has been in continual service for 20 years.
It's one of the most incredible engineering achievements in human history.
It's Rubins' second time traveling to the station.
So I wanted to be an astronaut ever since I was a little kid.
Also a virologist by training, Rubins will continue research he started in 2016 on bioengineering in space. But this flight is likely the end of a chapter in the long history of cooperation and competition with Russia. The Soviet Union won the first round of the space race, sending up the first man, cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin. The U.S. then saw and raised the bet with the moon landing.
Got the flag up now, and you can see the stars and stripes.
But after the United States suspended the shuttle program in 2011, America has relied on Russian lift, and for big bucks. This seat cost $90 million. Now U.S. companies, Boeing and SpaceX, are expected to step in. After SpaceX's successful mission and splashdown in August.
Splashdown.
And SpaceX is scheduled for the next mission and plans to take 3 astronauts up to the space station in November. Shep?
Richard, thanks. More space news now. NASA wants astronauts to behave themselves on the moon. Check out some of the rules laid out for the new moon landing program. They dubbed it the Artemis Accords. No fighting, no loitering, no trespassing at lunar landmarks. 8 countries on board so far in the coalition, Russia and China not among them. But NASA expects other countries to join the effort. The goal here, send astronauts to the moon by 2024, including the first woman. 60 seconds left on a race to the finish. COVID cases on the rise in 44 U.S. states. Some doctors are sounding the alarm now that PPE is running short. The gowns, the face masks, the gloves that keep them safe during the pandemic. Presidential debate canceled, but we will have dueling town halls at the same time on different TV networks tomorrow night. Joe Biden will be on ABC, while President Trump will do a town hall with Savannah Guthrie hosting from Florida on multiple platforms, including here on CNBC. And Amy Coney Barrett on track to become a Supreme Court justice after 3 long days of confirmation hearings. During questioning, the conservative judge steered clear of saying how she'd rule on some key issues, including abortion rights, voting rights, and the Affordable Care Act. And now, you know the news. For this Wednesday, October 14, 2020, I'm Shepard Smith, reporting next on our Troubles in the Skies. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.